We start today's program with some numbers on Proposition 123, the K-12 funding plan that would increase the money that goes to schools from the state land trust. Voters were extremely split, almost right down the middle. At this point, with about 100,000 ballots, including provisionals, yet to be counted, yes on 123 is ahead by nearly 9,000 votes. The pro-123 side spent millions, while anti-123 didn't do much in the way of fundraising. So what tipped those results? With me to discuss the politics behind it and the campaign is Barrett Marson of Marson Media. Barrett, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How are you today?
Well, I'm good.
Long night last night.
I was wondering how late you went to bed. I mean, I don't really want to get into your personal life, but yeah.
It was well after midnight, for sure.
So 123 was expected to be close, but even you contacted me and a few others did yesterday thinking, boy, this is going to be really close. So why so close?
You know, I really think that the part of the problem for 123 is state land trust reform. Always a very difficult topic. It has failed numerous times at the ballot box. So that's number one. Number two, this didn't have buy-in and strong support from everyone who should have been at the table. Remember, this was sort of pushed through the legislature, and not everybody was happy with it. Democrats weren't necessarily on board at the beginning. Some of them later turned, but they were never truly on board. And when you compare that to, say, the pension reform, which, you know, we're not even talking about that today because it passed with about 70%, you know, there it had everybody on board, months and months of stakeholder meetings. And so there was no opposition. This was different. Not everybody was on board on this. Some people just went along to go along, but were never really excited. And I think that was a big problem from Prop 123.
And what about the date? What about holding it in May as opposed to waiting till November?
Well, you know, when you get to an election like this, it is only the most, committed people who will vote. You know, in 2010, we saw about a 38% turnout for the 1 cent Governor Brewer sales tax. Mm-hmm. We're going to see much less than that, maybe 30 to 33% turnout, depending on how many votes are still outstanding. So it was a low turnout, which just meant people who were really informed and really had an opinion turned out. And that may have also hurt.
You know, Barrett,
there
were some critics that we heard from who had said, well, this is, in essence, a cop-out, that this is one of those things where we should hold the legislature's feet to the fire and continue with the lawsuit and that sort of thing. Are those people being unrealistic? Let's throw that out there, this idea that, because a lot of people would say that the Prop 123 option was not great, but it was much better than the alternative. How big an impact did that have?
Well, I think that's another big reason. Even the pro Prop 123 TV ad started off with, hey, the state hasn't done its job. So voters, please take up the slack from where the legislature has failed you. And that is a factor. I think people looked at that and said, why should I get people that I elect off the hook for doing their job? Shouldn't they do their job? And I think that was a factor for a lot of, people who decided, I want the legislature to step up, make some hard choices, make the calls that I send you to Phoenix, to the state capitol, to do. And I definitely think for some Democrats, that was, I'm going to vote no because I want to see the state legislature actually work this out. A lot of this money is owed already to the schools. I want to see them actually take care of this problem rather than give them a free pass.
Well, so does the closeness of this vote then legitimately send that message? Is it received?
No, because at the end of the day, you know, as long as this passes by one vote, the legislature will be off the hook and the schools will get money over the next 10 years. And, 6 months from now, no one will remember the closeness of this battle.
So, Barrett, finally, what does this do, if anything, to the power base of Governor Ducey, the influence he has?
Oh, I don't think that is necessarily impacted. I mean, 2018, he's still sitting in very good shape, of course. I think, he put a lot of weight behind this. No doubt he helped raise a lot of money, and this was his plan. Again, so long as it passes by one vote, the governor is going to be in very good shape.
Barrett Marson of Marson Media. Good to talk with you as always, Barrett. Thanks.
Hey, thanks a lot, Steve. Bye-bye.
This is KJZZ's Here and Now in Phoenix. I'm Steve Goldstein. So now that we know the outcome of Proposition 123, kind of, sort of, it's time to look at what might be next for K-12 education in Arizona. With me to discuss that, Rebecca Gao, Executive Director of Stand for Children Arizona, and Pearl Chang Esau, President and CEO of Expect More Arizona. Welcome to you both. Thanks for being here.
Great. Thanks for being here. Thank you for having us.
And Rebecca, let me start with you on this one. So based on the closeness, before we get into some policy issues, based on what you heard, the work that you have done, did you expect it to be this close? And were some of the reasons that Barrett cited the same ones you'd think of?
Yeah, absolutely. I think we understand and heard a lot of the distrust from the legislature and that same sentiment. And then you also had the sentiment that I heard from folks that it feels like they're constantly being asked to vote on education funding. And so it was a very complicated issue. And in a special election, that does make it really tricky to get the messaging out.
Pearl, what are your initial thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think, this was a complicated issue. It was a settlement of a lawsuit. It wasn't really a straightforward source of funding. The land trust is complicated. Lawsuits are complicated. So I do think that had a lot to do with it. And then I think there's the sentiment that this is, you know, that there are more steps needed. And what we saw in talking to voters all over the state was that regardless of what side of the debate they were on for Prop 123, there was almost unanimous agreement that next steps were needed. And so some people felt that they wanted more money for education, or they didn't feel like this was the way that education should be funded. But I think the good news is that education funding is a top priority, and how close the election results are is not an indication that support for education is lukewarm.
I promise you both we're not going to spend too much time on the politics, but I'm still curious to follow up on that, Pearl. This idea that even if it turns out passes, actually goes through, whether it's 9,000 votes, 12,000 votes, whatever it may be, ultimately a win is a win, and that indicates that enough people do believe in the next step. Because I think there are some people who are worried that this shows some sort of lack of enthusiasm, which would then make certain elected leaders say, well, maybe people aren't that committed to it. Maybe they don't really care that much.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that's the case. I think that we've built a lot of momentum around education funding, and one of the results of the Prop 123, just the process that's led up to this, is that I do think there's a broader and even more diverse coalition in support of education funding than there ever has been. And I think that that needs to continue to grow. And so regardless of whether people were for this or against this, which there are education advocates on both sides. If this passes, now we need to come back together. And even if it doesn't pass, especially, right, we need to come back together and take the next steps to achieve a long-term sustainable funding plan.
Rebecca, follow up on that, please. Yeah.
And I do think that's something that we all need to be very, very passionate about, that it's not enough to vote no and walk away this time. It's not enough to vote yes and walk away this time. Either way, we have to stay committed. And, you know, for those of us who are in this as our day jobs, like, we talk about this all the time. And I think the closeness of the vote, the lack of voter turnout, indicates to us that the public needs to stay engaged, and it's hard to have them disengage, and then it becomes an issue again and we get fired up again. I think we have an ask of voters and the general public to stay involved, stay engaged, and keep fired up. And we have lots of opportunities to do that now, thanks to groups like Stand for Children and Expect More Arizona.
Yeah, there are some people who, when money is on the ballot or changing the Constitution is on the ballot, they just blanch at that generally. Can K-12, Pearl, start with you. Can it improve as dramatically as people here who want it to without an influx of a lot of money?
You know, Arizona was one of the deepest cut states of any state in the country during the Great Recession. We lost, over 20% of per pupil funding. We did that at a time when we were raising standards, we were raising expectations, we were raising the bar for Arizona students. As you know, we're now seeing a massive teacher shortage. We're having trouble attracting and retaining teachers in this state because we pay our teachers at 75% of the national median, so we're not competitive. I mean, we are having real issues, and I think that that's why we're seeing, as we poll likely voters, that education funding is the top issue now, whether it's Democrats or Republicans. You know, when you've gotten cut all the way to the bottom and schools are considering four-day school weeks, it's clear that, obviously we want better student outcomes, but it's clear that funding is a part of making sure that that happens.
And I think we've also heard from employers in the business community that our workforce needs are simply not being met by the pipeline that we have. And there's a very significant awareness now, I think, in the employer community that this is a bigger problem than they've been willing to acknowledge in the past. And I think that does present a fantastic opportunity to keep this dialogue, whether or not Prop 123 passes, mm-hmm. more has to be done, both in terms of the families that improve their quality of life through education, but also in terms of our economic development as a state.
But in essence, money has to be a huge part of that equation.
It's hard to say not when we're at the very basement, right? And you can have lots of interesting policy discussions about does money matter and all that. But then we end up in this really catch-22 argument in the education community where then they're telling us, well, we don't want to fund failure. We want to fund results. And then you look at our NAEP results, and in eighth grade math, we did grow significantly. And then we hear, well, see, you can do it without money. So it's really disingenuous, I think, to start us down, not for you, but when we hear that argument in other places, it's really tricky to start down that path. Because the fact is, we were cut over a course of years. It's affected the classroom. We need to at least start with repairing that and then think about what our state needs to be head of the pack and leader economically and then fund that.
And Pearl, before we go to break, this idea of where the money should go first, I mean, talk about teacher shortage and competitive pay for teachers. How high atop the list is that for you?
It's the top.
Okay.
I think that if we want Arizona to have a strong economy and a high-quality education system, the number one thing we need to do is attract and retain great teachers in our state. And salary is an important part of that.
Mm-hmm. And when we say retain, how much of that has to do with retaining teachers who are already here or teachers who are being trained here?
I think it's both.
Okay.
Yeah. And we have to be able to compete in keeping our best teacher college graduates here in the state, as well as keeping those teachers who are doing a great job, but they simply can't afford to do their job anymore as they're, you know, raising a family and paying for their basic livelihood.
And Rebecca, briefly on teachers.
I would completely agree. That's the most critical element in a classroom, and it is definitely one that the numbers show we're falling behind.
Rebecca Gao is Executive Director of Stand for Children Arizona. Pearl Chang Esau, President and CEO of Expect More Arizona. We'll continue our discussion right after this on Here and Now. It's KJZZ's Here and Now. I'm Steve Goldstein in Phoenix. We're talking about Prop 123 and what comes next with Pearl Chang Esau, President and CEO of Expect More Arizona, and Rebecca Gao, Executive Director of Stand for Children Arizona. So there has been this discussion of what comes next, and obviously 456 would seem to come next. And even if there isn't a formal 456, Rebecca, what should that look like? What should the priorities be?
I think there's several funding priorities, but I think there's also an electoral step in the middle that's really important that, to me, the two go hand in hand, although it might not seem that way. So we do have Prop 301, which is our 6/10 of a percent sales tax. It does need to be renewed. It does sunset. So the sooner we start those conversations about making sure that gets renewed, the better. I think there are opportunities also to potentially expand that. So that needs to be part of the conversation. You have the Governor's Classrooms First Council, which is looking at more efficient ways of getting money into the classroom with perhaps not increasing the size of the pie, but there might be, you know, some issues that come out of that related to school funding that could help. Then you have the budget next year, the education budget, and so we need to keep on top of that and make sure that it continues to grow. I think there's some other ideas out there, but those are the key things in the next 12 months. But then you have the elections coming up in November. And this is our chance to tell the legislators that everybody's so angry with that we're going to vote with our vote and maybe make changes at the legislature and make sure that education champions get elected. I think we can't emphasize enough that that opportunity in November affects the education funding next steps.
Pearl, what does 456 sound like to you?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with Rebecca on a lot of the priorities for next steps that need to be funded. And I would also encourage us to think about it as the entire continuum, because children need to show up to school ready to learn, you know, set up for success in kindergarten. And that's an important element of it, especially because we have a lot of students in Arizona who are growing up in poverty, and they aren't necessarily getting the language exposure or access to quality early, you know, education opportunities that they need. And then I'd also look at it from the other end, the workforce pipeline. So I think a big reason why you saw so much of the business community rally around education funding as a top priority is because they're starting to see a problem with their talent pipeline. And what we know is that by 2020, a majority of jobs are going to require more than a high school diploma. Yet right now, we only have about 42% of adults in Arizona who have attained more than a high school diploma. So what that means is we need to elevate the outcome of the entire education system so that when students graduate high school, they're ready to go on to additional career training or a degree. And again, that's going to require additional resources, but it's also going to require that we, you know, that we spend them wisely.
Rebecca, as someone who worked for an administration, how complicated does that get to bring these stakeholders to the table and be on the same page?
In Arizona, it's probably less complicated than in other states.
Okay.
That's one great thing about Arizona is a lot of the folks that need to be engaged already know each other. We're so used to that dynamic. When we go visit other states, we learn the silos that exist that we don't have here. So I do think often we don't realize that that is a plus. Mm-hmm. So I think there's a great opportunity to keep moving forward. And I have seen the governor do it. And I think I hope that he continues to do it because that's the only way we're going to move forward.
For people who are major K-12 advocates and public K-12 advocates, is there a concern, should they be concerned that there is any sort of battle between emphasizing public versus private? Can that be a concern when it comes to what is next after 123? Should that be a concern, or should it just be about what's best potentially for Arizona kids?
I think it depends on what you mean by public versus private and what kind of policies you're referring to.
I think there was concern about vouchers. That mm-hmm. was something that came up quite a bit. Mm-hmm. And I think there are some people who, in an ideal world, want to see a balance, but there are some people who are afraid there won't be a balance, that one eventually will tip, that there isn't enough of a commitment to public, traditional public K-12. And that could include charters as well.
Right. So in terms of the voucher question, which in our state is the education savings account, I think a lot of us have been concerned about the accountability. And it's hard for Stan to take a position about expanding those without either academic or better fiscal accountability. So for me, that's just where the conversation stops, regardless of the philosophy of vouchers and choice. But I have seen a commitment to public K-12. I have. And I understand the fear. I do. And it's really critical when you think about the low-income areas, even if you do philosophically believe in choice, the issues of transportation, the issues of information about what quality looks like, that there are over 50% of the kids in our state that are in poverty, and those families don't even have access within 5 miles of where they live to an A or B school. So that is a serious issue that we need to resolve.
And Pearl, I want to get your final thoughts on this as far as what's next and what you have belief in, staying engaged, getting people to stay engaged.
Yeah, I mean, a message and a major priority for Expect More Arizona all along has been that we want people in Arizona to be informed and engaged on education issues, and that's how we're going to make sure that over time, every child that's growing in our state really does have access to a great education. And one of the most important things that people can do along those lines is to vote. They need to vote. And if anything we saw from this election, there's very low voter turnout on an issue that had a huge impact on education. So regardless of whether people voted yes or no, we're glad they turned out to vote. We supported this proposition because we felt like this got much needed funds in the classrooms immediately. It allows us to move on and work together to address other pressing issues in the future. But we want to, I hope the message people take away here is that, you know, you've absolutely got to vote, and that's not just on election day, but, you know, reaching out to your elected representatives, holding them accountable, making sure that you're communicating with them year-round.
Pearl Chang-Esau is president and CEO of Expect More Arizona, and Rebecca Gao is executive director of Stand for Children Arizona. Thank you both for the conversation. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.